Welcome to Community Conversations. These are pre-recorded interviews brought to you each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. on KRFY. Because of ongoing concerns about the COVID pandemic, we are not able to be in the studio doing live broadcast interviews right now. But we are still dedicated to recording and bringing to you topics of local and current interest, highlighting voices from our community. For Community Conversations, we are using phones and web-based technology so that participants can be recorded remotely. Please bear with us if there are any gaps or hiccups that might be caused by a slow or unstable phone or internet connection. Also, keep in mind that because these interviews are recorded, information may change between the time of this recording and the time that you hear it broadcast. Thank you for joining us for today's Community Conversation on KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho. Good morning, and welcome to another Community Conversations. And here we are. We're getting ever so close to the holidays. Our listeners can't see what I'm seeing on Zoom, but it looks like your house is very festive, Julie.
Oh, it is, Phil, and thank you for noticing. We haven't had a Christmas tree every year we've lived here in the Sandpoint area, but we couldn't skip it this year. So yes, we're happy to have a big, tall 10-foot tree. Yep. What's new with you, Phil?
Well, we decorate the ficus and we try to dress the cats, but neither one of them sits still for the Christmas photos very well.
Yes, of course. Hey, speaking of Christmas, I attended the Christmas bird count yesterday, Phil, and I have to say it was one of the quieter Audubon bird counts I've ever experienced. I think the birds were self-distancing.
They're taking cues, and this has been an unusual year. Yes. And as we come close to the end of the season, we have a topic today that we're really happy to bring to our communities. It comes together as we do close out this year of COVID and this time of focus on need and charitable giving and really opening of our hearts and sharing with the community. So why don't you go ahead and introduce our guests and topic, Julie?
I'd be happy to. So our topic today is Anovia and the United Way. They're partnership programs for North Idaho. And our guests today are Mark A. Tucker, MNM, United Way of North Idaho Executive Director, and Amy Lohler of the Anovia Foundation of North Idaho Regional, her job title is North Idaho Regional Engagement Manager. Hello, Mark, and hello, Amy.
Hello.
Hello, thank you for having us.
Hello, and so great to have you. They have an interesting program that they're going to share with us today. Phil, why don't you introduce them further?
Well, yeah, before we dive into the program, we always like with our guests, especially when we have new guests who are new to the show on, just to go into a little bit more deeper dive, a little background on who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, what makes you passionate about the work you're doing. And Amy, tell us first a little bit about yourself.
Great. Thank you, Phil. As Julie mentioned, I am with the Anovia Foundation. My title is the North Idaho Regional Engagement Manager. I live in Coeur d'Alene with my husband and our two sons who are in middle and high school. All of us are very community-minded and involved in numerous activities and groups. Anovia Foundation is a community foundation that serves the 10 eastern counties of Washington and the 10 northern counties of Idaho. A community foundation differs from a private foundation. I like to say that we're essentially community giving to community. We work to ignite generosity that builds vibrant and sustainable communities where every person has the opportunity to thrive. We work alongside donors throughout our region who care about this region to address community needs and support valued nonprofits throughout our 20 counties.
And what makes you most excited about the work you're doing? What do you just get jazzed about when you get up on Monday mornings?
Well, if those people who know me well would say my middle name is almost community. I'm very relational and I enjoy meeting people throughout our region. And one of my favorite authors, Simon Sinek, says that he has a quote that deeply resonates with me. His quote is, "There's probably no more important thing in a human being's life than helping to build and feel a part of a community." And I feel grateful I get to do this every day.
Wonderful. Mark, tell us a little bit about yourself. And United Way seems so ubiquitous, but there's always people who are really new to concepts like that. So tell us a little bit about yourself and the organization.
Happy to. So I'm Mark Tucker, Executive Director for United Way of North Idaho. I've been in this position almost 7 years, and my wife and I are empty nesters. So we do have a shelter dog who takes us hiking on a regular basis. And then we also got a COVID kitty. So my wife thought since she was working from home, it'd be a good idea to get a cat. So my dog wasn't too happy about it, but that's fine. We love the outdoors in North Idaho, like everybody else that lives here. it's a fantastic place to be. As far as United Way, I really love the structure of the organization. Most national nonprofits that you hear of are single 501c3 organizations with different local chapters. But United Way is made up of 1,800 United Ways in 41 different countries. There's about 1,200 of us in the United States alone. There's 7 in Idaho. And each one is its own 501c3 organization. So they all have started at different times. They have their own articles of incorporation, bylaws, board of directors. So United Way of North Idaho started in Coeur d'Alene in 1957. And in 2016, just my second year here, we rebranded to United Way of North Idaho to better represent the region that we serve. So we serve the 5 northern counties of Idaho. And we've had to make sure that we stay connected to the full 5 northern counties, which is a challenge when you're a small organization. We have 4 staff members, so we're not huge, but we have great partnerships. And that's really the benefit of United Way, much like Inovia, in partnerships with other community nonprofits. You know, we work to provide grant funding, but we also work in collaboration on different projects and make connections, whether we get involved or not, just to help the community. So, and I'll reference, it's funny that Amy mentioned Simon Sinek. I am going to reference Stephen Covey because our work reflects the 7 habits of highly effective people. And habit number 5 is first seek to understand. And that's one of the things that I think is really critical in our work, because with nonprofits and limited resources, we need to make sure that we're addressing the most pressing unmet need. And so that's where we rely on information from those that are working directly with people in the community in need to understand what's not being done or what's being duplicated and get people working together. So, that led us to research and then the ALICE project, which is a study that we can go into detail later, but I feel like I've taken up too much time already in this segment.
Oh, no, we like this part. You can take almost as much time as you like, but perfect. This has been a unique year for all nonprofits, of course, and well, the entire country and the entire world because of the COVID crisis. And I'm curious to know how that's impacted your work personally and also your programs at both organizations. Amy, why don't you begin?
Sure. It definitely has been a unique situation we all find ourselves in. Early in March, Inovia was inspired by the Seattle Foundation, and we launched a COVID-19 response and recovery fund, which is aimed at providing support to all of our critical nonprofits throughout our region that are well positioned to meet the needs of people who've been disproportionately impacted by the pandemic. And within the first 2 months, we raised $3 million. To date, we've completed 2 rounds of COVID-19 grants and have distributed grants to over 130 nonprofit organizations throughout Eastern Washington and North Idaho. The grants have been directed to organizations addressing a huge range of needs, including food security, shelter, seniors, mental health, healthcare, and youth. We've also granted out an additional $25 million of CARES funding for the Spokane community. And we've done all this with the same amount of staff that we had prior to the pandemic, which, as you can imagine, has been extremely challenging, but also very rewarding for us as staff.
Wow. Mark, tell us about how COVID has impacted United Way and you personally and your programs.
Well, me personally, I mentioned my cat. Well, it's not my cat, it's my wife's cat. but as far as a staff is concerned, you know, we obviously started working remotely. For those of you that on this call that can see me, I'm in my office, but I've typically been just the one that comes in to make sure that, you know, we can get the mail and answer the phones and things like that. But we've been working remotely. And, you know, one of the things that I really talked to our staff about was taking care of yourself first. And I think that's something that's been critically important. There's so many people and agencies that we're working with that are struggling because of fundraisers being canceled. We know that our donations are going to be down a little bit. So we're working to make sure that the people that are doing this great work are taking care of themselves. Otherwise, they're not going to be able to help the people they've been helping. So I wanted to start with myself and our staff personally to make sure we're taking care of ourselves. Let them know that your jobs aren't going anywhere. The payroll protection program kept us going. And we are fortunately in a good, healthy financial position to be able to work our way through this. So that was the primary focus. You know, I think personal well-being is critically important, and being flexible, being able to work and understanding that there's two staff that have kids that are trying to homeschool at the same time that they're trying to work. So flexibility, wellness, just being there for employees is something that I think is really important. As far as our organization, you know, we had events canceled. We canceled our golf tournament, our spring dash that normally brings 1,000 people together for a 5-mile run. We had a virtual run. So we had about half the participants, which is still pretty good. Probably from about 5 different states. We let them run wherever they want and they submitted their own time. So it was on the honor basis. Obviously nobody was qualifying for Bloomsday this year, but it was still interesting and fun. We do a ride for Alice that is a motorcycle ride that we were able to do in August, and that raised some funds for the scholarship that we're working with Inovia on. So it was nice that, you know, being a motorcycle rider, I got to work on or bring an event that raises funds for a great cause, and we were able to do that being socially distanced.
So this brings to mind a couple questions here, and you know, we could delve into the weeds, but maybe a top level view. It strikes me that both Inovia and United Way are in some ways uniquely positioned to really be a good gauge or assessment of the impacts of COVID on our community, which are for some members of our community, there's real negative downsides. They lost their job, their food insecurity to begin with didn't get less secure. Kids going back to school, which we'll talk about, have raised a whole new level of complexity. Individuals working from home, dealing with childcare and remote education, to name a few. And I'd like to get your assessments on what you see as the trends of impact. But at the same time, I reflect on and would invite you to reflect on the positive things that have happened, the outpouring of support for some of the programs, the ability for many of the people who did remain working to be able to help others. And I think that's part of the story we don't often hear about. And again, you're both really uniquely positioned to look at that. So tell us a little bit more, and maybe we'll go back and Amy, start with you.
Yeah, the trends of COVID vary significantly, obviously, throughout our region, but And they've changed. They're constantly evolving as the pandemic goes on. But initially, it was really basic human needs, like you said, like food security and shelter and serving our seniors. And then, as you say, when schools start to open, it's looking at how do we support our families so they can return to work when schools are not open fully. And I have been very privileged to see some unique situations develop out of that. I specifically am thinking about several nonprofit organizations here in Kootenai County that have collaborated, who've never collaborated before, to support our homeless population. And I just been very inspired to see unique partnerships and collaborations happen that haven't traditionally happened. As far as outpouring of support from our community, donations have been always critical to the work that we do through Inovia, but the gifts this year have been incredible. You know, as I said, in the first 2 months of the pandemic, we raised, $3 million for COVID-19 response and recovery funds. That's just, and we've granted out more money this year than we have in the last 5 years, just because we have had such an outpouring of gifts and generosity from our community.
Yeah, I would echo that. We've seen some requests in Coeur d'Alene specifically for relief funds, and we had some local individuals that got together. And you know, we had been in communication with Inovia and Idaho Community Foundation about the response funds that they were going to have. And knowing how, especially how Inovia does such a great job in the 10 northern counties in Idaho, in investing those funds, we realized that Coeur d'Alene is going to have the most resources needed for that region. And so our thought was, if there was a separate fund, it wouldn't compete. It would actually help Inovia's funds go farther in the region. So we were part of the Coeur d'Alene COVID-19 Relief Fund. Our dollar amount was significantly less, but we did raise over $100,000 for the local community. And we determined that, in talking with some local agencies and municipality and the chamber and Panhandle Health District, we narrowed our needs onto four categories. One was most vulnerable seniors. One was preschoolers and families with preschoolers, school-age children. And then the service industry is one that has really been interesting with restaurants shutting down and taking a huge brunt, that's an area that we saw a lot of need. So in childcare, the preschoolers is something that really, after we made those initial assessments, that's the one that we saw a lot of need for. So that's why we're partnering with Inovia to move forward on this.
Well, the reason that we're gathered together today, one of the main reasons, is to hear about an initiative in which Inovia and United Way are partnering. And it's a program to provide scholarships for childcare for families in need. Let's jump into that. Would you like to begin, Amy?
Sure. I'll lay the groundwork a little bit as to how the partnership formed, and then Mark can give some background as to what they've been doing even before COVID in this area. But as most schools in our region started their 2021 school year in hybrid learning or virtual learning, it became readily apparent that our school-aged children needed critical childcare in order for parents to return to work. And we had already an acute awareness that access to quality and affordable childcare in our region was an issue. So we immediately began seeking ways to support this need. And I have to thank Mark and all of the staff at United Way of North Idaho. We knew that United Way already had a grant program in place to provide childcare scholarships to families with preschool-age children So to us, it just made a lot of sense to develop a partnership with them to expand those scholarships to families with school-age children. And so we contributed $10,000 from our North Idaho COVID-19 Response and Recovery Fund to United Way's fund that was already in place. And since then, it's been very rewarding to participate on the application review committee and know that together through this partnership, we're making a difference for families during these challenging times.
Yes, and it's go ahead.
No, you go.
a $10,000 contribution to something like this is a fantastic addition to what we had started. And as Amy mentioned, we had started working on childcare scholarships a while back. I mentioned the United Way ALICE project earlier, and that's an acronym for Asset Limited Income Constrained Employed. So these are individuals that are working, but still struggling to make ends meet. And there's about 43% of the population of five northern counties that are either in poverty or in that category. So that's a good chunk of our population that's struggling to make ends meet. When we saw the budget in that report, childcare was by far the highest budget item for a family of four. It was more than housing, more than transportation and food. And so we created a subcommittee that wanted to take a look at the childcare industry, why it was so challenging. And we come to find that it's a horrible business model. it's really hard to make money because if you want to have quality childcare, you need to pay a decent wage. But we find that most childcare providers are ALICE themselves, so they're struggling to make ends meet. And we know that a lot of employers, we had several HR professionals that were on our ALICE task force, and they tell us that childcare is one of their biggest issues with employees, whether it's missing work or being late or not taking promotions or jobs because they earn too much and lose assistance. So we've had an early care and education task force for the past probably 4 years. And a childcare scholarship is one of the things that we thought, you know, this will get families through rough times. And we are certainly in rough times. So we're glad that we laid the groundwork on this. We worked with North Idaho College Children's Center and a few other organizations in developing applications that are in line with the Idaho Child Care Program. And so this project is really rewarding. We got a community development block grant from the city of Coeur d'Alene for $10,000. And so that's limited to the city of Coeur d'Alene. And again, Inovia is outside. So we've invested $19,000 for 30 families to have childcare scholarships. And that ranges from 2 months to 5 months. And we limit it to $1,500 per family. So it's certainly huge. It's just starting. and I've got a couple of stories if you want to hear some of those from some of the applicants.
I'd love to hear some stories. I want to reflect a little bit for our listeners, your perspectives on with COVID, more people are working from home. And so it may be easy to assume, well, they'll just take care of their children and work from home. And as someone who has several staff people who have tried to juggle and balance that, and I see the smiles in your faces, that actually leads to way more complications and underscores the necessity to have good childcare options. But tell us a little bit more about your experience as to how the significance of childcare has shifted or at least been highlighted with the COVID pandemic.
You know, one of the things that really stands out to me, so you mentioned that a lot of employees are able to work from home. We know that a lot of the ALICE population are those that are essential workers and they have to be at work. They work at the grocery stores, they work in restaurants, they work in the streets department or parks department or whatever it might be. There's so many jobs that cannot be done remotely. or they don't have access to quality enough internet to work from home, or whatever it might be. So we know that, well, and yes, also there is the fact that it's near impossible to stay focused when you have kids in the room with you. I have a dog and a cat, and it's hard for me to work from home. So, you know, it's definitely something that is not a simple solution to just work from home, because yes, they're physically safe because you're there, but nobody's productive. They're not going to be productive in school, and you're not going to be productive at work.
My middle schooler and my high schooler walk into my office at least 16 times a day, and I've come to call them my interns, and let anybody who's on a Zoom call with me, let me know. My interns may pass through the room from time to time throughout our meetings. And that's middle school and high school. Like, you know, it's even more challenging for families that have young children who need more attention. And I also want to touch on, to Mark's point, a lot of these essential workers who can't work remotely, some of them have lost their jobs too. And it's even more difficult to be out looking for another job when you're concerned about childcare and where, you know, how to pour resources and time into looking for a new job when you need to be with your kids. So.
Yeah, well, I'd really like to hear a couple of stories about folks who've been helped by the scholarships. Let's hear a story or
okay,
two.
So I have a couple, and in the application, so the wording of this has really not been drafted for marketing purposes. This is literally what the applicants put on their application. So this person actually is fortunate enough to be able to work at a childcare center. They do not get childcare for free. However, this one, it sounds like one of them they do. So she writes, "I'm a single parent with three little girls. I'm doing my best to provide the most stable household I can. I pay 100% of our bills with little help. I'm still paying medical bills from the twins being born and their hospital stay. Any kind of help would be appreciated. I'm fortunate enough to work in a place that allows my older daughter to come for free, but it's also one of the highest tuition childcares in the region." And this person, so we do require that they provide proof of income. And then we also require the either approval or denial level letter from the Idaho Child Care Program. But this person pays 41% of their salary, their monthly salary, to childcare. It's been said that the average affordable childcare nationally, it should be at 10%. And so what we do when we're evaluating these applications is we work to try and get these individuals down to 10%. So that's what we did in this case. Here's another one that is a self-employed housekeeper. It says, "I try to keep my business and personal expenses as low as possible. I try but have not succeeded in increasing my clients due to the COVID pandemic. My child needs to continue receiving good education and childcare." You know, so this is someone who is not able to work, and this is one of those essential workers. And being self-employed, I think there's probably less chance of, you know, payroll protection or protection program. I don't know what unemployment looks like. I know that it's certainly different than when you're laid off due to COVID. So again, another situation. And I mentioned that percentage. Most of these that we get are in the mid-20s range. So 20 to 30% of their monthly salary is going to childcare. And we've had them as high as, I think, 57% is one of the highest I've seen. So it really is tugs at the heartstrings when you see some of these applications come in. And Amy helps us review them too. So she's seen firsthand how the process works and what kind of applications we get.
It's really stunning, the need and the impact that it can have. And I think one of the things we all hope to achieve today is some sense of where the program's at. Are you still accepting applications? And if so, how do folks who maybe are just hearing about it for the first time pursue that?
Yeah, so we would our website is the easiest way to get to it. It's uwnorthidaho.org. And then there's a link to the child care assistance there. We would love to keep this program going. We know that it's going to be desperately needed through the winter. We know that it'll be needed through the end of the school year. We started with probably 35,000, I think total 30,000. And we have about 15,000 left in the fund. We've awarded 19,000 in funds so far. So we've gone through obviously more than half of it in less than a month. So we know that the need is great. But we definitely have funds still available. We've been getting calls from individuals wanting to donate as well. So we're hopeful. We've applied for a couple other grants. So we're hopeful that we'll be able to keep this going at least through the winter. So, and again, thanks to Inovia's contribution, this is very much eligible in Bonner County. We have several Bonner County child care centers that we've helped out with other trainings and materials and supplies that with the relationships we've been building recently. So if there's child care providers that are listening to this that know they have clients that would be potential to apply, then reach out to us or have them reach out.
And so if there are folks listening who are hearing about this, say, this is a program I want to help, I want to support. Again, the best thing to do is to go to your website to look at the how to donate.
That would be a super simple way. They can text Idaho Kids to 40403 if they want to do it that way. And again, you know, Inovia has done a great job of assisting regional needs, and I think they've recognized this as a need as well. So if they wanted to set up a fund that would help for long term, that would be even better.
It's so interesting because healthcare and childcare are sort of together, but childcare seems to be not talked about quite as much as our issues with healthcare in populations that are struggling. And so it's a problem during COVID, but of course it's a problem that's going to continue on because childcare is so darn expensive for families. And that leads me to the question of what will 2021 look like for this partnership and then into the future. COVID may come and go, but childcare remains a huge issue in our area.
Well, Mark could probably speak to this more extensively, but many of my colleagues and I are involved in national conversations about the fragility of our childcare system nationally. And it has been an issue, a longstanding issue for a long time. COVID has just exposed how fragile this industry is and has also exposed how essential it is. I think it's been somewhat easy to overlook it for some of our population that it's really critical. And so now this is an opportunity to elevate the conversation and to help people realize how they can support this industry. So Mark, like I said, could speak more extensively about the fragility of it. And then moving forward, absolutely, as I said, my colleagues and I are looking at ways to elevate this conversation within our business community, because I think it's an opportunity for our businesses to support their employees and make affordable quality child care more accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I definitely echo that. It's an interesting thing in the child care. We're hoping that the powers that be, whether it's regionally, statewide, or nationally, would look at child care more as infrastructure as opposed to an industry. You know, this is something that they are preparing the future workforce. The school systems would be a lot more efficient and effective if kids were entering kindergarten ready to learn. And so childcare is much more than babysitting. There's so much brain development that happens before 5 years old that it's critical. Even the U.S. military is using the highest child care standards because they know that a majority of the population would not qualify to serve in the military because they're not mentally prepared, not just physically. And so what they're doing is they're focusing all of their efforts on early learning for military families. So if they recognize it and the professionals in childcare industry recognize it and educators recognize it, I think really it's time to step up. And that's the viewpoint we've been looking at for the past couple of years. But as you mentioned, the COVID has really turned what we have considered a crisis into a catastrophe. And so now I think people are starting to notice.
I think that's a really important distinction. This is not just mere babysitting. It's really about early childhood education and development. And without opening a huge can of worms here, that gives rise to questions of who can afford that and who can't, questions perhaps of equity. Would you talk a little bit about how each of your organizations are addressing perhaps those questions of equity in regards to childcare?
Amy, do you want to take a stab at that one first?
Sure. As I mentioned earlier, our mission at Innovia is to ignite generosity that builds vibrant and sustainable communities where every person has the opportunity to thrive. And we really see the efforts to create opportunity for everyone to thrive is centered around the opportunity gap. And that is very much education related. So Innovia Foundation has not only grants funds out to nonprofits, but we're also involved in initiative work in our communities. And a number of those initiatives are centered around education. And we really believe that if we start making differences in our education system and providing resources and wraparound community support for education throughout our region, it really will make the difference for the success of our community, that people will have successful educational careers and then be able to pursue post-secondary options that enrich our community. So we really believe in the importance of education. And I personally have stepped into a role where we supported a third grade literacy initiative in the Coeur d'Alene School District. We know that third graders who don't read at grade level are less likely to graduate and then less likely to be able to pursue post-secondary options. And United Way has been a great partner for us in that work. And part of that has been kindergarten readiness. And so it goes all, it's full circle all the way back to, you know, quality childcare. It's not just, you know, making sure that they're safe, but making sure they're ready for school when they enter school.
Absolutely. I'd just like to add in Sandpoint, we were right at the beginning of the year, we were working with Panhandle Alliance for Education to do a screening of a documentary called No Small Matter that talked about this very thing, how childcare is not only an industry for families, but it is a huge impact on the entire community, on employers, on the future of that child, as well as the current family. So it's a multi-generational approach that really is going to make an impact.
Great. So as we move towards the end of the interview, as we look forward to 2021, are there any specific trends or other programs besides the scholarship for childhood education that you'd like to touch base on, say, at the really high level?
I would like to jump in and just mention that in the first 2 days of March, just prior to COVID, Innovia launched 10 leadership councils to represent our 20 county region. Each leadership council ranges between 10 to 15 people and is comprised of trusted leaders and people who really want to make our part of the world better. They serve both as ambassadors and advisors to Innovia. Innovia cannot fundamentally know our communities unless we're in our communities. So our leadership councils help us know the needs of our communities and help inform us on where to invest in our communities. So moving into 2021, we will continue to live into our strategic framework. And we'll really need to rely on our leadership councils to do that work. We've lived into this in a new way this past year, and going forward, there's still a need for us to know our communities. There's still a need for us to learn about the needs of our communities, and there's still a need for us to hear from our communities as to how to invest in them. So to accomplish this work, we'll continue to work very closely with our leadership councils. And having said that, I'd like to just let everyone who's listening know that we're actively seeking new members for our leadership councils now. So if anyone is interested in learning more, I would invite them to visit our website, innovia.org.
Thank you. Mark, any specific initiatives that you'd like to touch base on? Or?
So there's a couple. We do have a Ready for Kindergarten program that is also done in Sandpoint that we're excited to get started again. But our corporate engagement is something that it's been a strength as far as workplace campaign and giving methods through payroll deduction that really makes it easy for anyone to contribute. You hardly miss it when, you know, you do $5 a pay period. But, you know, what we've started doing a little bit more, and there's a handful of Sandpoint companies that have been doing this, is our Day of Caring, which is just one day where we get hundreds of individuals from companies that set up teams and set aside the day and go volunteer in various nonprofits in the region. So obviously that was a little different this year. We had a few volunteer projects that went at different times. We didn't have a big gathering, but that's a great way to get connected to local agencies in the community and be part of something bigger. So we've also been coordinating for some businesses virtual volunteer opportunities, as well as on their own business site where they assemble like literacy kits or hygiene kits for nonprofits. So we're happy to facilitate things like that. It's a great way to get involved in the community that doesn't break the bank.
And I would say it's a great way for people of any age, but I'm thinking specifically of young people, to begin learning how to be charitable givers, to work on giving a portion of their paycheck and really implement that into their lives. And, you know, I had a question for you both about your style of nonprofit, and in that you don't offer direct services, you receive donations, and then, of course, the money flows through you. And the question was, why might a person who wanted to give in some way choose your type of organization versus just researching and selecting individual nonprofits? Either or both of you could speak to that.
I'll start by saying that because of the incredible partnerships that we have, such as our leadership councils, you know, we partner with a lot of amazing organizations, even Equinox Foundation there in Sandpoint, that we have an incredible way of really keeping pulse of what's happening in our region. And I think that that breadth of knowledge of the needs throughout our region can provide some assurance for donors that their money, their gifts are going to really essential, critical issues and supporting work that is really making a difference in our community. That in addition to the fact that, you know, we are not just a conduit for gifts from donors, but also working within our communities to create leadership opportunities and to provide resources to our communities to address the issues that are important to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I would echo that. You know, much like Innovia, we have we rely on partnerships in order to be effective. A lot of our partnerships are not only with our impact councils, which are similar to their leadership councils who review grants, but it's also with the agencies that are directly helping individuals. So that helps us understand what they're seeing. And then our community care fund grants are something that, you know, is like investing in a mutual fund or something like that, where you can pick a specific topic, say education or financial stability. And we know that we will vet the nonprofits. We have volunteers that take a look at them and make sure that the funds are being used exactly what they want for, with agencies that are efficient and effective and making an impact in the community. We do also have a couple of direct service programs that we provide. But then also, you know, there's not many other people that are looking out for specific needs in the community, such as early care and education, like we are in partnership with Inovia. So I think that really is what sets us apart.
I'd like to just add to this conversation. And so for our listeners, in the interest of full disclosure, I sit on one of Inovia's leadership councils and have been privy to some of the processes since March. And what I'll say, and it sounds like it rings very true for United Way as well, is that by donating or supporting either Inovia or United Way, the individual donor who wants to make an impact in the community, say on an issue like food security during the COVID crisis, that individual might not know which local food bank organization help assist is most in need. And so the folks at Inovia, especially working through the leadership councils, can look at that, make those determinations, and turn around in a very rapid response the assessment. So they really do a lot of the legwork, both organizations do. And I want to take the opportunity to applaud both of you individually and your organizations for all that you've done, not just this year, but throughout the years.
Well, thank you. I always say, though, we can't do this work alone. And it really is because of amazing partnerships and volunteers throughout our region that we can do this work. So,
yeah, it's wonderful. Well, as we come to the end of our interview, let's remind our listeners the best ways to support Inovia and United Way. Can we have some contact info?
Really, all of our information, including my contact information, is on our website, inovia.org. There are also options there for donors to give gifts of any amount. There are drop-down menus with all of the funds and opportunities to give there. And also, one might mention that our community grant program, our annual competitive grant cycle, just opened this week. So nonprofits who might be listening can access information about those grants and the application there on our website as well.
So I'll certainly be applying for those funds. And, you know, as far as the contributions for United Way, I mentioned our Community Care Fund grant, but I also wanted to mention that we have separate county funds. So if someone wants to contribute to the Bonner County Community Care Fund, they can certainly do that. And we will ensure that 100% of that stays in Bonner County. Any of our funds, 100% does stay local. So that's another misconception with a worldwide brand, is that it goes everywhere, but 100% stays in North Idaho. And our website address is uwnorthidaho.org. And our phone number is 208-667-8112. If anybody wants that as well.
Thank you both. Before we close out, one final thought. For the listener who might not yet have heard, the CARES Act this year does offer a special tax provision, and I'd like one of the professionals to explain it.
Well, I guess I'm considered a professional since I do work for a nonprofit, but the CARES Act funding says that for each individual, $300, so $600 per couple, non-itemized, can be deducted. So so that's a nice little additional perk, and $300 would go a long way to help a child care scholarship.
Yes, that's good to mention, because as we know, with earlier tax reform, it had become very difficult to itemize our charitable donations. And this is really a nice thing that we can do this year. Well, Phil, I think we're going to close it out. And I'm going to thank our guests today and our well, thank our guests, Mark A. Tucker and Amy Voller. Mark is from the United Way of North Idaho. He's the executive director, and Amy Voller is of the Inovia Foundation. She's the North Idaho Regional Engagement Manager. We've been talking about their partnership for scholarships that will help families in need with childcare. It's been a great afternoon talking about it. I'd like to thank you both, and I would like to thank KRFY listeners for joining us today. This has been KRFY Community Conversations, and thank you for listening. We'll be in touch next week.
Well, this wraps up another community conversation. Thanks for listening to KRFY 88.5 FM, listener-supported community radio for North Idaho and beyond. All of our programs can be heard live streaming on the web at krfy.org. And all of our community conversation shows are recorded and saved as podcasts on our website. KRFY strives to bring our community important local information. Currently, impacts from the COVID-19 pandemic remain at high levels across our state and region. In Idaho, we are at stage 2 level of restrictions and recovery. And Bonner County is currently at the red level, the highest level for risks of impact from the COVID pandemic. It is recommended we all follow the Panhandle Health District and government guidelines. If we help each other, we can get through this together. So let's be good neighbors and friends and protect each other. Please wear a mask in public, especially inside buildings and businesses, and keep a 6-foot distance apart from each other. Wash up and stay at home as much as possible. And stay home if you are sick. Stay safe, and thanks for listening. And before we close, we'd like to tell you about a new feature here at KRFY. If you'd like to see what song you have been listening to, you can go to our webpage or our Facebook page and find the playlist link. Then you can see the song you just heard. Until next week, enjoy all of our great programming, including Otto's Eclectic Mix, all day long.